Hello again, I'm Alec Wilkinson. This is Sailing Uncovered, episode 14, our guide to the Volvo Ocean Race.
This is life on board in the same pair of pants for 3 weeks as you battle every element that nature throws at you.
It's never easy to say goodbye, particularly with what we're about to do.
The Whitbread, which then became the Volvo Ocean Race, that inspired me as a young sailor and gave me the wanderlust.
Yes, the toughest professional sporting event in the world is back. Kicking off on October the 22nd in the Spanish city of Alicante, and it finishes in The Hague around the end of June next year, which is one hell of a slog for all involved. By the way, this show's best before date is well beyond the start of the race, because we're going to speak to Di Cafari, skipper of Turn the Tide on Plastic. We'll hear from the man flying the stars and stripes in this year's race, and guiding us behind the scenes is Conrad Coleman. Yes, he's moved on from his heroics in the Vendée Globe and is now at Volvo Ocean Race HQ. And it means he has exclusive access to the race. He's also got a big announcement to make about his sailing career. So stay tuned. And as if all that wasn't enough, by popular demand, our Idiot's Guide is back.
At 45,000 nautical miles, this will be the longest course in the history of the race and feature almost three times as much Southern Ocean racing, around 12,500 nautical miles, as in recent editions.
He doesn't really sound like an idiot, does he? Anyway, Conrad Coleman, welcome to the show. Three-time circumnavigator of the globe, but not actually taking part in the Volvo Ocean Race.
No, this is true. Unlike the other people that you'll be interviewing for this, I'm not actually sailing in this race. Although, frankly, I would really like to be. And I have been invited by the Volvo Ocean Race communications team to bring the Volvo Ocean Race to their audience and to have me break down what on earth sailing around the world is actually like.
So what makes the Volvo Ocean Race so special? What makes a Vendée Globe sailor want to be involved in it?
Well, before I was dreaming of the Vendée Globe and decided to invest a third of my life in chasing that dream, I was a young kid growing up in New Zealand watching the Whitbread come and go. And my sailing heroes were not the same ones as the French, for example. You know, I didn't even know about Eric Tabaret almost before I moved to France 10 years ago. But for me, the gods that walked on water were people like Sir Peter Blake and rough and tumble characters like Grant Dalton. And as a young New Zealander, it was incredibly inspiring for me to see New Zealand companies sponsoring New Zealand boats, skippered by Kiwis, designed by Kiwis, and to see New Zealand sailors always on the podium. And so it was very much the Whitbread, which then became the Volvo Ocean Race, that inspired me as a young sailor and gave me the wanderlust.
The Volvo Ocean 65 boat is 65.6 feet long. That's a 20-meter waterline. It's 30 meters to the top of its mast. That's the same as stacking seven London double-decker buses on top of each other.
So some amazing statistics there about the boat. Tell me more about what makes these racing machines so amazing.
They're pretty powerful. They're all carbon boats with a swing keel. It goes from one side to the other by 40 degrees. They've got two dagger boards. What's amazing is that there is no end to the amount of work that these sailors can do, because often when they're reaching or running, they'll have up to three headsails. So maybe a big jennaker and then a medium jib and then a small staysail. They've got the keel, which in fact they trim almost with the gusts. Frankly, I don't envy them, because they're going to be pulling their hair out all the way around the world. These boats are the closest one design fleet in the world, that on a percentage basis, gram for gram, these boats are more restrictive than the Olympic laser class. I saw the old race director out there measuring lead shot gram by gram into canisters, so that the boats literally to less than a kilo weigh exactly the same. The rigs are set up and tensioned by Southern Spars themselves, and the boats are actually serviced by the Volvo Ocean Race boatyard. And so most of the maintenance is actually done by an independent third party. And so even if the teams were motivated to try and cheat by changing the profile of the rudders or of the keel or the volume of the ballast, that they can't do it. It really comes down to the sailors. And that's the key message to get across, is that these boats are, to the gram, exactly the same.
When sailing downwind, a Volvo race boat has a sail area the equivalent of 2.5 tennis courts. That's an awful lot of power.
We have one female skipper. She's heading up the Turn the Tide on Plastic team. It is an old friend of this podcast, Dee Kafari. Hello, Dee.
Nice to be back.
It's your first Volvo Ocean Racer skipper, the only female skipper in the race. You must be relishing it.
Nervous anticipation, I think, is the correct term. I'm excited. It's a huge responsibility and challenge that lays ahead. And I'm a little bit nervous as well, obviously.
There must be a certain sense of relief that you're almost there, because building a team from scratch, that is a huge task.
And given that we were announced mid-June, I've had very little time to get the team together and have any time to prepare. So we've got to the stage now where I just think we just need to go sailing. It is what it is, and we'll take it on.
So how did it all come about?
Well, it's an exciting time. Sustainability is often a word that's used quite a lot. And so it's very topical, and the timing is perfect, because this year Volvo Ocean Race have produced a sustainability partnership where a number of partners and supporters have come on board to try and promote the sustainability. And it was decided amongst that partnership that there should be a boat flagged under the United Nations initiative of Clean Seas Turn the Tide on Plastic, which then fell into my lap. And our principal funding partner is the Mirpuri Foundation, a Portuguese philanthropist passionate about ocean health. And that's where one of the caveats of my crew were that I needed to have a Portuguese sailor on the team at all times. So I'm very proud to have Bernardo and Frederico join us, and one of those will always be on the boat. So that was part of my team decided for me.
You've mentioned sailing under the UN flag. That's a pretty exciting thing to do. Can you just explain in more detail how it came about? Because it must take a lot of permissions to be able to do that.
Oh, definitely. And I think what it does do is add gravitas to the message that we're giving. So it's all very well talking about sustainability, but we're now using the logo and the banner that the UN Environmental Initiative Clean Seas Turn the Tide on Plastic use. And they've suddenly now got this platform that's global, that's going around the world spreading a message. And the partners that are on board with the sustainability partnership, be it the Mirpuri Foundation, Ocean Family Friends, 11th Hour Racing, AXA Nobel, they're often involved in teams, but they're all giving the same message. So while we're all competitive on the water, we're all actually trying to deliver a very similar message about ocean health. And it's an issue, and we need to do something about it now.
And what are you hoping to achieve when you're out there? I mean, how are you spreading the message?
Well, principally, we're there as a Volvo Ocean Race team. So obviously, I'm looking to fight off the other six boats and perform on the water. But we're also aware of our responsibility as ocean ambassadors of spreading the message of raising awareness and changing people's behaviour, maybe.
Claire Francis was the first female skipper in the 1977 race. Tracy Edwards obviously led the first all-female team in 1989. Have you heard from either of them?
Well, I have. I've heard from Tracy. She was probably one of the first to get in contact and cheer from the rafters, as you say, and there's been a huge support. So she's very much backing what we're doing. And I think the main thing, like if you talk to Sam or you talk to Tracy, is that it's about having this genuinely fully mixed team. This edition of the race with all the mixed teams now will try and dispel male and female sailors, and we'll all actually just be Volvo Ocean Race sailors. And people then in the future should be picked on their ability rather than their gender, hopefully.
And you've gone for a young crew, without going through necessarily everyone. You've got an Olympian, Irish Olympian, Annalise Murphy, Bernardo Freitas, who's a Portuguese Olympic sailor in the 49er class. Ledin Mon, the Welsh America's Cup sailor, Henry Bombi, another Brit, Bianca Cook of New Zealand, and then Lucas Chapman of Australia. So lots of young men and women. They all went through trials. What were you looking for in particular?
Well, it was a hard wish list, and it was amazing the number of people that applied. I think just seeing that opportunity for more than two under 30s to be on a boat representing a team got people excited. Because of the time scale, I didn't have the luxury of time, so I couldn't put anybody through a year's strength and conditioning program. I needed sailors ready to go. They may not have all the experience, but I needed them fit and strong with a sailing ability. And then I needed them with the right personality to mix in and take it on. And I may not have any Volvo Ocean Race experience amongst them, because 60% of my crew are under 30, having never been round the world before. And therefore, you know, have no idea what it's going to be like in 3 months' time when I take them into the Southern Ocean. But I think if you look at the skills that I have, I've got Olympians, America's Cup sailors, offshore sailors. There's a fair few round the world on there once I take into account the senior sailors I've put on board. They're young, they think differently, they're not, you know, they're not scared to try new things. And it's been, you know, really refreshing to have their energy around. And it's about harnessing their enthusiasm now and making it work together on the boat.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that across the teams there have been lots of trials and lots of Olympians have taken part, and not all of them have actually made it, because the skills and requirements of sailing offshore are different from sailing an Olympic campaign.
They are, and it's that realization of this is days on end. In this very small space, you don't get to go home and have a shower and eat nice food and get a bit of space away from people, go to the gym the next morning. This is life on board in the same pair of pants for 3 weeks as you battle every element that nature throws at you. And having the right personalities to help people, pick people up when they're down, keep people going and keep focused for 3 weeks, not 3 days or 3 hours, is a big difference.
You've been around the world several times. What are you most looking forward to?
Well, bizarrely, this is number six, and no two laps are ever the same. But what will be huge is leg two for us, Lisbon to Cape Town. I've got nearly half, well, I've got loads of my boat going through the equator for the first time. So Neptune is going to be very busy. And then the next thing I think will be a major milestone is, you know, if we can get around Cape Horn in one piece, I will have just delivered a lot of brand new sailors around Cape Horn for their first time, which is a huge buzz. For me to enable people to have this opportunity is huge. Yeah. And it's very exciting.
That must be immensely satisfying. Have you got any plans for any Neptune initiation ceremonies already?
It's got to be good. But one thing for sure, we've been very equal on our boat, whether you're male or female. So whatever happens to the males, it's going to happen to the females. So I think they're all a little bit nervous.
And finally, your target for the race. What will make you happy as far as results are concerned?
I think the reality is with the Volvo Ocean Race, you don't do it just to take part. You don't do it for fun. You're doing it because you're competitive. I've got a hugely competitive crew. And I'm confident that as a team, we're going to develop as the race goes on. So I want to make sure we get better every leg. And there's definitely some podiums for us to be had, that's for sure.
OK, Dee, the very best of luck. Thanks for joining us. I know how busy you are.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Well, Conrad, Dee mentioning the youngsters she's got on board. And it's fantastic that young people in general, male or female, are now getting more of an opportunity, especially on Dee Kafari's boat.
If I was a young sailor, I would absolutely want to be with Dee on board. She's got an incredible breadth of experience from crewed sailing to solo sailing. She's skippered four races around the world. She's done five in total.
You'd think she's had enough by now, wouldn't you?
Well, clearly she's got more to give to the sport because she has this incredible experience as a teacher. And when I've been talking with her young crew, that really comes through, that they feel nurtured, that she has patience with them, and she's actually got a mammoth task because she's got these young guys and women. For example, Annalisa Murphy, she got a silver medal in the laser radial, incredibly experienced boat on boat contact sailor, and yet she admitted to me that she gets terribly seasick. She's quite nervous about going offshore, and in fact she's never spent more than three nights at sea in one go. And so it's going to be a case of Dee bringing her offshore experience and trying to sort of rein in these young, enthusiastic sailors so that they have a competitive package offshore.
Do you think they've got a chance, though?
They're feeling pretty bullish. I think that the attitude and the hunger that I've seen in the eyes of all of her sailors means that they're not going to, let's just say, they're not there to make up the numbers. That I think that we're going to be in for a surprise with them.
We've mentioned a few Olympians already, but I think this fleet has more sort of rock star names than ever before. None other than Peter Burling and Blair Tuke, the two Kiwis who obviously are America's Cup winners now.
There are so many medals on board these boats. I don't know how they float, frankly. There's so much hardware. What's quite interesting is that Peter Burling is sailing on Brunel with Kyle Langford, who was the wing trimmer on Oracle. So on one boat, you've got the guy that won the cup and the guy that lost it. So I'm sure that that'll lead to many interesting conversations. But also, you asked the question about why are these Olympic sailors coming into this fleet? And I think that it comes down to the fact that it's one design, that these sailors have been sailing boat on boat, fighting, scrapping for every centimeter all the way up the Olympic race courses. And frankly, it's exactly the same. This is boat-on-boat match racing, but for 45,000 miles. Concentration, the amount of rigor that you have to maintain on board your team, and I think that it really is attractive to the Olympic mindset, and the boats that have Olympians on board are going to go fast.
Conrad, you talked earlier about the rivalry between Kyle Langford and Pete Burling, now together on Team Brunel. Well, let's hear it from the horse's mouth. Kyle Langford, welcome to the show. So how are you and Mr. Burling getting on?
That's a good question. Pete's a good guy, and we've been rivals for the last few years, but it's he's obviously very talented, so it's good to be on the same team as him. But it was a little bit unusual at first to, you know, be on the same boat as him, but it's all good so far.
So the obvious question really is, why on earth are you two guys doing the Volvo Ocean Race?
For me, losing the America's Cup, that kind of door shut, from what we knew it was. And so, I've always wanted to do the Volvo, and the opportunity came up to join Team Brunel, which I jumped at. And then for Pete, obviously they knew the cup was going to go to monohull, so he probably is looking to upskill in the monohulls, and this is the perfect time to do it. A lap around the planet is a good time to learn monohulls inside and out, so good opportunity for both of us.
Although, presumably, you're not saying goodbye to the America's Cup.
No, absolutely not. But I think that, it was kind of clear with Team New Zealand they were going to go in a different direction to what we had at Oracle. And so I need some other skills. And also at the same time, this is always a race that I've wanted to do. And so it's the timing has actually worked out quite well.
And have you ever sailed around the world?
No, this will be my first offshore race. So I'm pretty new.
So are you relishing it or facing it with dread? I mean, are you aware of what to expect?
I think I'm probably pretty unaware of what's going to come my way.
Okay, so how does Bauer Becking compare to your old skipper, Jimmy Spittle? Because it must be like swapping, sailing with your older brother for sailing with your dad.
Yeah, no, you're right. But it's actually they've actually got pretty similar personalities. Jimmy's very, very relaxed, and I've never heard him say a bad word or get angry. And Bauer's exactly the same. He's really chilled out, and I quite like sailing with those kind of people. It's a very good atmosphere on board, and they're good leaders. So it's great. They're not too dissimilar.
Have you found a team for the next America's Cup? What's going on out there, especially with all you Aussie sailors?
No, not really. There's a lot, there's a lot of chat going on at this time in a campaign, but really the direction isn't that clear as to what the boats are going to be and the skills of people that you need. So I think that probably once the class is announced and people know what the type of boat will be, then we'll probably see sailors start to sign up. But for me personally, I haven't signed up or talked to anyone at this stage.
Do we know if there's an Australian team being put together?
Yeah, I think it would be great if we could get an Australian team together, and there's some guys working in back in Australia trying to make that happen, so hopefully something comes of it. There's a lot of great Australians in all teams, so I think it would be good if we could get a team together, but I think there's some people working on it.
So first impressions then of offshore sailing?
The first night that I had with the team, I was just thinking, I was like, wow, you know, this was a lot harder than I expected. And I was actually really shocked at how difficult it was. You know, not the sailing side of it. That's all very similar. You know, you're on a boat trying to make it go fast. So that's no change. But the just being, you know, fatigued and, you know, trying to do do everything, you know, on no sleep and, you know, freeze dried food. So, you know, the first few days were a massive shock. And then after that, you kind of get into a routine and a bit of a rhythm and then it, you know, becomes normal. But yeah, it was a definite shock my first few days.
Okay. So first time around the world, what's the thing you're least most looking forward to?
I don't know. There's a lot of things that I'm looking forward to, you know, well, that I'm not looking forward to. And I guess the no sleep and the food program are probably the two things that are going to be the toughest. But
is that something, especially the no sleep, is that something the team have been able to help you prepare for? Or has there just not been time since Bermuda in June?
Yeah, well, with Team Brunel, we're a very late entry. And so we actually haven't had that much time to train and kind of prepare. So we're just kind of picking up the pieces really just to make sure that we're ready for the start. So yeah, the sleep kind of stuff, we haven't, you know, I don't think it's something you can really prepare for. You just need to get into it and carry on. So you know, the old guys have been giving us plenty of advice, but most of the advice is just toughen up.
Okay, so what's the thing you're most looking forward to?
I think that, you know, these boats downwind and or reaching in 25 to 30 knots is and some waves are a lot of fun. And so I think that kind of sailing is just awesome. And so I think, you know, getting those kind of conditions, especially as we get further south, I think that's just going to be awesome. And so I think that's when the boats kind of really light up and that'll be a lot of fun.
Now, are you doing all the legs?
Yeah, that's the plan.
So how's it going to work? You know, career-wise, whilst you're away sailing for what, 8-9 months, the whole of the America's Cup thing could all be sorted. Is Jimmy out there doing deals that hopefully will mean that you step straight back into a job?
I'd hope so, but yeah, I'm not really sure. And you know, for me, this is the focus now, and so I'll be, you know, giving 100% to this, you know, and not really trying to be distracted by anything else. So you know, if the opportunity comes up with the America's Cup, you know, halfway through this race, you know, it will be interesting for sure. But, you know, this is what I've committed to and what I'll be working hard to for the next 9 months.
Just before we wrap it up, what skills do, you know, America's Cup sailors like yourself bring to an offshore team like Team Brunel? Because you're obviously all fantastic sailors. But is there something, some ability, some skill that you've learnt in match racing that you can bring to them?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the America's Cup is all about making a boat go fast. And, you know, we spend 4 years of our campaign, you know, just trying to make incremental gains on the boat to increase the performance. And this boat is no different. So I think that, you know, having an eye for detail and trying to, you know, make incremental gains is probably, you know, the biggest thing that the America's Cup guys bring to the Volvo. Not that, you know, the Volvo guys aren't doing that. You know, they're all very good sailors as well, but, you know, that's just been our sole focus for 4 years. So I think, you know, just, you know, trying to make those small gains, you know, in performance with how you trim the sails and, you know, set the boat up and, you know, that's kind of our area of expertise.
Kyle, the very best of luck. Hope you can enjoy some of it.
Yeah, I hope so too, mate.
despite the hardships. Now, best of luck. And I mean, you're in the most experienced hands in the race, aren't you, in Bauer Becking? So we'll keep our fingers crossed for you.
Yeah, thank you, mate. I'll be needing a bit of luck, I think.
Conrad, Team Brunel, their skipper, Bauer Becking. do you think, finally, he's going to win this race at his 8th attempt? It's just unbelievable that he's still going.
They've got a bright yellow boat in Team Brunel this time, and yet, for me, they're really the dark horse. For me, the two favourites are Dongfeng Racing and Mapfrey, in that order. And looking at all of the talent that they've got on board Brunel and the experience from Bauer Becking and their navigator Andrew Cape, I think that their navigation is going to be great. KP is going to place the boat exactly where they need to be in the weather systems, and then I think that Bauer can just line up his fast drivers and let them do their magic.
One team we haven't mentioned, Scallywag, skippered by David Witt. They struggled, didn't they, in leg zero in the preparation races?
Well, yes, they did. But to put that in perspective, the Volvo Ocean 65 One Design class is quite particular in the way that it needs to be sailed. It has a lot less power than the boats that they're used to. It needs to be sailed with a lot more heel. There are a lot of little tricks of the trade that that they've spent a lot of time subsequently learning. And I had a bit of a chat with David this past week, and he said that they've done 5,000 miles of offshore training since the end of leg zero. They've had to have a vertical learning curve, and I think they've done it.
Okay, let's carry on our whirlwind tour of Europe and meet the American team, Vestas 11th Hour Racing. It's run by the same guys who sailed the Alba Medica boat in the last edition of the race. Charlie Enright is skipper, and Mark Towell is his right-hand man, both on and off the boat. Mark's on the line from Lisbon. So how does that relationship with Charlie work exactly?
Yeah, Charlie and I have been working together for over 10 years. We've organized a number of sailing campaigns together and had a lot of success. And this campaign's no different. You know, we're both co-founders of our company. Charlie leads all of the activities on the water, and I lead all of the commercial activity on shore. I was on the boat in our last campaign as well on Alba Medica, and I'll be on board as a trimmer driver on board the team for this race as well.
So last race, you were the first boat to reach Vestas Winds when it struck the reef, got stranded. The boat you're on, although it's called Vestas Racing, it's actually the boat that you raced as Alba Medica. So it's not the boat that got stuck on the reef. But are you at all superstitious that you're now racing a boat by that same name?
No, not at all. You know, Vestas as a company they've been a wonderful partner. Their commitment to the race and the value that it provides has been consistent, and they've, you know, seen enough value in the property that the Volvo Ocean Race is that they decided to give another campaign a go.
So three Americans on board your boat, and I think you're the only ones in the race. I might be wrong, but I've had a quick look through the crew list. Is that correct? You're the only Americans taking part?
To the best of my knowledge, I think there's a few American OBRs.
Now, okay, so, I mean, there's always been a following for the Volvo Ocean Race in the United States, but do you think your presence, plus, importantly, the fact that it's coming to Newport, Rhode Island, do you think it could grow a much bigger fan base in the States?
You know, we're very proud to be known as the American team, and that was the case in the last race, and we have some very, very loyal fans and followers back at home, both in Newport and just all the way around the country and around the world, that have stuck by us and supported us both remotely and come to see us.
Why do you think there are so few American sailors in the race?
It's a good question. You know, you've seen American presence in the past, always in smaller numbers. I think it's quite hard, particularly with the offshore sailing too, for Americans to break into the kind of higher echelons of the sport. Down in New Zealand and Australia, they have more formalized apprenticeship programs, which are really the entry into some of these campaigns. And we just our level of infrastructure in that respect is lacking a little bit. But I will say that, you know, one program in particular that's working on that is the Oak Cliff Sailing Foundation or Oak Cliff Sailing Center down in Long Island, New York. And we're actually doing a partnership with them, where they're sending us two of their apprentices to every stopover, and they're going to be working with us and alongside the team and getting a really in-depth understanding and experience of what it's like to be a part of a team like this. And in some small way, that's something Charlie and I are really proud of, because it's a way for us to pay the opportunity forward to hopefully create more opportunities for more Americans in the future.
There certainly seems to be a need for some fresh American blood in it, doesn't there?
Absolutely.
So you studied at Rhode Island, so you spent some of your formative years there. What will it mean to sail back in there?
Oh, it's great. I mean, Newport feels like my second home after Hawaii, and you know, I went to Brown University and spent quite a bit of time in Rhode Island since graduating in 2011. You know, and as I said, we have some really, really loyal fans there. The entire town turned orange last time with the Alba Medica campaign, and I'm sure it'll be blue and orange this time with our campaign colors. So that'll definitely be a highlight of the race.
How do you deal with saying goodbye to family and friends on departure day? Because I know just how emotional those are. As a reporter who's covered the race on many occasions, that departure day with the departure ceremony and the families coming down dockside, it's always emotional. How do you deal with it? And is there anything particular you say?
It's really hard. It's never easy to say goodbye, particularly with you know, what we're about to do. And I think it's actually harder for the families than it is for us. You know, they're the ones that are thinking about the risks and, you know, following us along constantly, every you know, status update with the progression and making sure the boat moved one place to the next. And you know, for us, it's definitely emotional, but at the same time, we're also thinking about the racing and just ready to get into it.
Okay, so finally, targets for the race. Last time round with Alba Medica, you won a leg. What are the team's targets this time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, last time with Alba Medica, we won a few of the import races. We were the first team to Cape Horn, and I think the biggest highlight was that we won the last leg and really ended on a high note. And that's a big reason why Charlie and I have been very motivated to put this campaign together and get back into the race.
Come on, I'm going to get you. I'm going to nail you down. What are your targets?
Okay.
What will make you happy?
We're in it to win it. I mean, there's no secret about that. I can't imagine a race and not trying to win it. But at the same time, you know, we were realistic about our expectations in the last race. And I think this time it's not unreasonable to expect me on the podium or even to be at the top of the podium. So that's our focus.
Mark, very best of luck to you all. Thanks very much for joining us, fitting us into your schedule.
Hey, thanks very much for the time.
So what do you make of their chances, Conrad?
Again, is kind of a dark horse. I think that they can do well. The big question is going to be whether Charlie is, I think, the youngest skipper in this race and can keep his rock stars in line. They've got a lot more pressure on their shoulders this time and a lot more potential, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Now, what about the future of the race, Conrad? Because before we've even got this edition underway, CEO Mark Turner has already announced that he's going to be leaving. Where does that leave the race, and why that decision?
Mark is going to stick around until a replacement is found, but it's certainly not going to have any effect on the running of this race. There's an incredible staff in the Volvo Ocean Race headquarters that is 100% focused now on implementing a great race. So as a fan, don't worry, all is good. As to the future, I think that the Volvo Ocean Race is going to return to its three-year cycle. Mark had been pushing to get it onto a two-year cycle, which he felt would help the sales process. That one of the key challenges in running a Volvo Ocean Race campaign has been, what do you do with the sort of down years in between the cycles?
Yeah.
And so Mark had felt that it would be easier to keep sponsors involved and also to sell new sponsorships during the course of the race, using one race to sell the next. And I think that that's still possible. I think that the objectives are still very clear, that we are selling sponsors on the next race, only it's going to be probably in 2020 rather than in 2019. But from a personal perspective, I am incredibly excited about the new boat that they've chosen to build. It is a short-handed 60-foot style boat that is very similar to the ones that I've raced around the world myself, either double-handed or single-handed. And so it sort of allows me to go full circle. I'm hoping to be able to participate in the next edition, and I'm talking with my sponsors to be able to do so. And I'm hoping that I can go from the young kid in New Zealand looking at these incredible sailors charging around the bottom of the globe and coming into New Zealand victorious, to hopefully being able to run my own kind of campaign and participate. And now that the Volvo Ocean Race has come much closer to the short-handed sailing that is so familiar to me.
So we lose the CEO, but right here we have an announcement from Conrad Coleman that he may be in the next race. Well, we wish you well with that. But finally, let's just talk about where we can see you and how we can follow the race once it gets underway.
Well, the way to follow the race is online. We're across all of the social media platforms. And so all of the little snippets are going to be going out on Twitter, some of the great photos on Instagram. But primarily, we're going to be on Facebook, and lots of videos going up there. There's the boats are sending back amazing content every single day from the dedicated onboard reporter. But your place for analysis and for discussion about the race is going to be the show that I am co-presenting, and that's going to be going out in the middle of the day, European time, and that's going to be your one-stop shop for the race. So I look forward to seeing you there.
All right, thanks again, Conrad. Well, that's it for this episode of Sailing Uncovered. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you enjoy the Volvo Ocean Race. We'll be posting extra material from the race on our Facebook page at Sailing Uncovered, or follow us for any breaking news on our Twitter account. We are called at The Sailing Show. But that's it from me, Alec Wilkinson, and the team. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next month. Bye-bye.